The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that is right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are live here after the Survivor Island of the Idols finale. Steven, season 39 is over.
Wow, we're finally on the other side of the hump.
Easy.
That was bad verbiage. Wow. That was not intended. No.
Okay, so here we are, and it is finale night. Congratulations to Tommy Sheehan, the winner of season 39 of Survivor.
Yes, congratulations to Tommy, the first winner in a long time. Someone was saying on Twitter, since Denise, to win the game without any idol or advantage played. Certainly the first in an incredibly long time to not require those idols to save him to get deep into the game. I'm really excited to talk to you about what that means for Tommy's game, for Survivor. And I was really into it. I love that this was really a more old school game from Tommy. And I think people, you know, I've seen some criticism that he was boring, that he didn't do very much. But that's, you know, those are the old school Survivor virtues, and I loved it. I'm really excited to talk more about it.
Okay, we'll talk more about it. Yes, it certainly was a throwback win here for Tommy Sheehan. Did not need any help from the Idols or the Avengers, or even from the Island of the Idols. Robin Sandra did not even give him any advice, and he somehow managed to win the game.
Yeah, the only person in the final five, in the final six, if you're counting Dan, to not go to the Island of the Idols, and he emerges the winner.
Yeah, so there you go. So congratulations to Tommy. We will talk about all that. I thought it was a very fun finale. I was there in person for the 3-hour event earlier today. So I was at the taping. I watched the live reunion show, and then I did my interviews on the red carpet. We will have those posted later on tonight, both audio and video. So be on the lookout for that. But very happy to tell some stories about my day over at the finale today. And then we will have more to come on Thursday when Mike Bloom and I answer your feedback questions as we wrap up the season on Thursday. So get your feedback questions in. Mike Bloom and I will answer them. Mike Bloom also in attendance with me tonight at the live show. So a lot to talk about here tonight. Of course, everything that went on with I thought the show did a really great job with the segment with Kelly talking with Jeff. We'll talk about that as well here. But first, it was a Tommy win that I think that a lot of us saw coming. It was hard to sort of really imagine another person that was going to be able to swoop in and take it, Stephen. Was it ever in doubt for you tonight?
Well, again, like I really felt like the edit was teasing a Tommy win. You know, in terms of the threats, and you and I have talked about this in past know-it-alls, you know, everyone really did think that Lauren was a bigger threat. People certainly were saying Janet was a bigger threat than Tommy was, you know. So in terms of like who going into this final five really was predicted to win, you know, then Lauren drops this bombshell that she's never made fire once in 39 days. Who are these people? You know, fire making is a major part of the end game. How, at least, you know, even if you're not doing it along the way, how when you get to like final eight, final seven, are you not practicing fire making? I just don't get it. But I also want to talk about Dean and Dean's game and sort of, you know, because he really did make this late game surge. You know, he was pretty DK chilling all season. And then in just the last few days of the game, he won a couple immunities, two immunities, right?
I believe he won two out of the last three. He got the idol nullifier. He found the idol. And yeah, I really thought that there was a chance that I thought that Dean was maybe going to be the out of nowhere winner of this season. It looked like, and maybe, you know, in the room, you know, people are cheering, you get excited. I thought that this was maybe one of the closest final threes that I had seen, at least in terms of what I was watching on the TV show.
Well, you know, I remember watching the Survivor Cagayan finale and then not being sure if it was going to be Tony or Wu at the end. So, and that was a blowout. This actually was a blowout. It was 5-2, I think, or whatever it was. It was all the votes except two. Eight votes to two, I mean. So it was all the votes except for Elizabeth and Aaron. So this was not a close vote at all. And, you know, it was funny because it had me thinking about last season where you had two contestants making very similar cases, you know, Gavin making that Tommy argument. Hey, I was there the whole time. You know, I was part of every alliance. I was part of every blindside. I made all these all these social moves and all these successful votes. And then the counter argument being, you know, from Chris/Dean, you know, I woke up at the very end and I did a few really splashy things in the last couple of days. Well, you know, last season, Chris, that obviously worked out for Chris, but it's funny because people, you know, a lot of fans said yes, and Chris deserved it. I mean, obviously many more fans said Chris did not deserve it, but, you know, a lot of people were making the case that Chris deserved it because he did have those last few incredibly impactful days. Here you have really similar arguments and a very much reversed result.
Yeah. You know, the Tommy game is a really interesting one. And, you know, in the light of five straight male winners of the game, longest run in the history of the show, I know a lot of people are upset that it has been, you know, five seasons in a row with the fire making challenge, five seasons in a row with a male winner. Not every single person who has won the fire making challenge has gone on to win the game, though. But Tommy's win is a throwback, and as you mentioned to open the show, it is a win that does not use any of the, you know, this was not a Ben Dreebergen finding the idols left and right. This was not Chris Underwood getting voted out and coming back into the game, or even, you know, Rick finding all of these idols. That it was a good old-fashioned win for Tommy. And just to give you a little bit of a preview from his interview on the red carpet, he really is embracing that, Stephen.
Oh, good. Yeah, I mean, I bet he is. And it seemed, you know, that's what we saw too. You know, we certainly saw what he was saying at the end where he had all of the information. And I thought that was a really interesting point when, I think it was in response to Missy, but I don't remember the specific moment in the final tribal where people were saying, so, you know, this entire part of this game, you had absolutely no role in, you're saying? And he's like, no, quite the opposite. Because I had all this information, because I was in everybody's ear, I knew all about every idol. I knew all about every advantage. And I was able to use those to my, you know, to serve me. And, you know, we certainly saw that was the case where, you know, Dean came to him with the idol nullifier. Janet came to him with her idol. You know, Lauren came to him with her idol. He really was that information center. And we haven't seen that in a while where that person who is just the heart of the biggest alliance. I mean, maybe Wendell is maybe the closest thing we've had actually in the last couple seasons to that.
Wendell had, you know, the incredible social game. Also, you know, had the close ally in Dominic. In terms of Wendell, I did win immunities and he had idols and also the Eric Reichenbach necklace, but I'm not sure if he ever had to use them to save himself off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I just mean in terms of like someone who really is that sort of, you know, central figure in the bigger alliance. And, you know, he wasn't, like, as Tommy said, he was not just the guy who stayed with his core group and hoped that was the bigger core group. You know, we saw him making, alliances with people outside of his core group. Certainly that was incredibly important when through that alliance he made with Dean that stopped him from getting blindsided. And I think it was a really, you know, it was a quiet game. I do agree that probably, it was sort of a bummer not to see a woman win. Like, not that, you know, the gender of the winner necessarily, that we should be rooting for one person or another. But, you know, apart from just the five last seasons, the last 14 seasons there's only been three women winners. You know, the first 25 seasons of Survivor, there were 13 men and 12 women. The following 14 seasons were 11 men and three women. So, you know, I think there's something that's changed about the structure of the game or the structure of something, you know, probably the fire making, maybe the way the advantages are run. You know, who knows? It could be anything, but it is something has switched in the way the game is run.
Okay, so just to go back to Tommy, I do think that the beauty of the Tommy game, once we get further away from it and can sort of look at sort of like more of the big picture, this was a season where threats got voted out. Threats got voted out, and people that were viewed as goats ended up being taken further along into the game. And it's unclear at this point exactly how much, you know, Tommy was able to factor this into his calculus of how to play the game. But had he won challenges, had he found idols,
right,
had he gone to the island of the idols, that had he done any of these things, which would have helped him get these things, which would have helped him in the game. At the same time, he's a 6'4 athletic guy with a great story. It would have increased his threat level and ultimately got him voted out of the game. So Tommy ended up playing a perfect game to sort of camouflage him among the people who were not ever the biggest threats in the game.
Yeah, and even like we were saying, you know, like I was saying, even going into that final five, like, you know, he's maybe three or four on that threat list. And it was interesting that, as Jamal pointed out, Tommy got taken, and he has been the first person to win the game in that GOAT position of getting taken to the end. You know, he was the person. And actually, that's another thing we should talk about. That was a brilliant moment where he convinces Nora he's no good at fire making, and therefore Dean has to be the one to eliminate Lauren. Mm-hmm. Like, that was such a great moment and a great move. And I'm glad that he gave himself credit for that at the final tribal. But you know, he was the first contestant since they've had fire making to win from that GOAT position.
Yeah. First time in five seasons to be the person who got brought along. And again, I thought that that was another great move from Tommy to be somebody who was a threat, who got brought along and then was able to turn it around to get people to say, why did you bring Tommy to the end? There was a bunch of great moments. Steven, I thought that the final tribal council was very, very fun. I thought that that was one of the most enjoyable final tribal councils that I think I've ever seen.
What did you like about it?
I just thought it was really, really fun. I thought that, you know, you had three different and distinct personalities with three kind of clearly defined games. I thought there were a lot of really great moments. Anytime you have Nora there in the final tribal council, we had like the great moment with Dean talking about the legacy advantage, which then he finds out in the final tribal council was not actually a real legacy advantage. We had like the thunderclap and the rain pouring down out of nowhere.
That was a great little interlude.
I thought it was a really fun final tribal council. So I thought that we really got a lot of good questions from the jury and a lot of the players trying to define what their games were. So I really enjoyed the final tribal council. And Steven, I thought overall, look, the Janet getting voted out at five was a bummer here tonight, but I really did enjoy the finale. And I think a lot of that did have to do with Dan finally being out of the game, because I think that even in these other episodes, which didn't at all get into the Kelly and Dan storyline, every time Dan was shown on the screen, it was, you know, ripping off the scab of being reminded of the Kelly and the Dan incident. And then just to have him gone, to not have to cut to his reactions on the jury, I did feel like that it added a lightness to this finale that we haven't had in this season for since that Merge episode.
Yeah, and there was a lot of fun moments too. I mean, like, you know, there I completely agree with you. Just getting Dan out of there was just such a, like you said, it like added like a certain like breath of fresh air to the whole season, added certain lightness. And there were like a lot of like that moment where Nora is standing over Lauren as Lauren is trying to make fire, and Nora is saying, you know, I could destroy you, or like I could do whatever I want to incapacitate
you. Throw as out like all the machetes, and then you won't be able to practice.
As like, and this was her example of how like nice she was being to Lauren, is that she's not throwing out all the machetes. It was just such a, Nora has really been one of my all time. I've never typically been a fan of like the Debbies or the Phillips, where it feels like they're really performing and they're playing this like character of like, look at how kooky I am, you know, and here's my like nicknames that I'm giving everybody. With Nora, it was just so pure. I just loved every one of the Nora interludes.
Yeah, Nora, I think, was an incredible part of this season, and I was very happy to have the chance to meet her earlier today, and I thought she was also very fun in person. Did you think, Stephen, what at all, was there a shot for Nora to thread this needle in the final three?
You know, I, regardless of her game, I mean, Nora had a pretty, you know, impressive resume, right? She won that final challenge. She had three immunity wins.
That's right.
I think the challenge for her was always going to be that other people had sort of dismissed her out of the gate as this sort of like kooky person, you know, and even like Jeff's question to her was like, Nora, you're a kooky person. Tell us about what Survivor is like for kooky people, you know? And she was a self, I mean, that's no like slight on Jeff. Like she was a self-described kooky person. So, I don't know if she used the word kooky, but I feel like that was her reputation among the other contestants, mm-hmm. and that there was just no way she was ever going to be able to go get beyond that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I would love to have seen her if, you know, if I was going to be a consultant in her corner of like, okay, what are we going to say? Like if she really could have, you know, pounded the table and said, you know, that this was, you know, you guys underestimated me. I played this game the way that I wanted to play it. But I just think that while it seemed like people were talking about it, like, oh, I'm undecided, it was Tommy's tribal council to lose.
Yeah. And I do think there was a chance for Dean to win it. You know, Kelly had that line about how, hey, if you had come in and said I played this act for 36 days and then just ripped off the mask at the very end, maybe I would have, you know, considered voting
like
for
the Masked Singer.
And I've always
taping on the
wanted
same
that. Exactly. That's what it should have been. It was someone dressed up in a giant
DK Chillin
costume. Head. Yeah, DK Chillin costume.
Yeah.
And no, but you know, that was sort of what we were hoping for from Devin Pinto in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. And it's my dream to see. I was hoping that was going to be Dean's whole thing. Like, I've played this part and like, here's who I really am. And I really felt that Dean, the biggest ball Dean dropped at the final tribal was not sort of like giving his story of himself. And, you know, Kelly had that kind of question, like, who are you, Dean? I don't know who you are. And what he said was like, hey, I'm just a chill guy. Take things as
He's
they
chilling.
Come. Hope an idol will drop. But like, that was his opportunity to be like, you know, I have a wound inside me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been very interesting. Steven, I really enjoyed Dean down the stretch here. I know he played the idol nullifier against Janet, but I thought that just as a character on the show, I thought he really came into his own to be sort of like we discovered sort of like all these personality quirks between running his hands through his hair and then the tongue that doesn't stay in his mouth and the sneakers and, you know, all the constantly referring to himself as DK Chillin. That I did think that he turned out to be and like he as a guy who seemed like, OK, he's totally boring. Is this guy going to be purple? Like, I think he really did turn out to be a very quirky character in the season.
Oh, yeah. I really, by the end, came to really, really enjoy Dean. I mean, you know, we were all mad at him when Kelly
several
was voted
times.
Out because of him. Yes, several times. Exactly. But I do think in the last couple episodes, he really became like a big, great, fun character. And like, has an amazing Survivor resume. I mean, he did a lot, you know, I mean, certainly more than a lot of other losing finalists.
Yeah. No comment. Steven, let's talk about Janet, who ends up having the idol nullifier used against her at the final five. I did like it when she came out with Jeff, and she elaborated on this in my conversation with her earlier tonight about idol nullifier has no place in the game here at the final five. I will flash back to four seasons ago, Ben on an idol run. Seems like that the case was, I believe Dr. Mike was like, hey, there needs to be some way to stop the idols before you get to the final four fire making. So who has the point here? Is Dr.
100%. I mean, if there can be an idol at the final five, there has to be a possibility of an idol nullifier at the final five. Otherwise, it's just like Otherwise, it's just like you get like a straight shot from 6-3. It's crazy without ever having to survive a vote. Mm-hmm. That to me is bonkers. Or I guess from 5-3. I was very sad that it was used on Janet, but I think the fact of it is tremendously liberating because that's crazy that at the final five, she's like, well, I don't have to worry anymore because I've got this idol for now, and then I'm going to ace the fire making, and then I win the game. Like, you shouldn't be able to know, no matter who you are, at the final five that you've already effectively won the game.
Yeah. Janet's plan says, hey, play the votes on me. We saw Dean mention a similar plan to Boston Rob with the legacy advantage. Boston Rob said, hey, you should never do that, even if you have the real legacy advantage. Do you agree with that, Stephen?
I think that the Boston Rob is coming, from a more old school perspective, and even counting like season 22 as old school, where now just like so much is just big flashy idol plays right in front of the jury. That seems to like really be the way that the seasons are defined. And I honestly was thinking that I wonder if Dean had made more of a spectacle out of that final five tribal council, if he could have gotten more jury votes, not necessarily one, but he kind of played it chill. He may have been too DK chilling. Yeah. Where, the idol nullifier was played and he didn't even give it a bing. He had an idol in his pocket. Like, why not be like, hey, I'm determining this tribal council. Janet, she's played her idol, but I've played an idol nullifier. I'm giving this idol to Tommy. I've got my necklace. I, Dean, am like determining who goes into the final four. Like, really make theater out of it.
Yeah.
And like tell that story to the jury before having to sort of like retcon it at final tribal.
Yeah. He ends up going out of the game or going to the final tribal council with that extra idol. Like, I thought that he could have like played it on Tommy to make it look like, that's almost like bringing somebody to the final tribal council when you play idols on them. He didn't make that much of it. I mean, he talked about it in his confessional and then also in the final tribal council of like, I had the idol nullifier. I've got the legacy advantage. I've got the hidden immunity idol. I've got the hidden necklace.
He didn't do anything.
Like, I have all the bling. Yeah. But it was more than, sort of like an anecdote than anything that ultimately was, demonstrative.
And so to that end, I think if you like, if it's definitely an advantage, although I guess the nullifier changes that, like the idea of like putting all the votes on yourself as a way to have a flashy move. So I guess now in this era of advantages and disadvantages and like unadvantages, negavantages. Maybe you never try to get all the votes on yourself because you don't know what like magic thing is going to come out of the bag of tricks next.
So I think it's complicated. I think that what you shouldn't do is, hey, everybody, here's the plan. Put all the votes on me tonight. I'm going to play my idol. I think that you sort of like open the door for somebody to then sort of hijack the plan. But if you can sort of get the votes on yourself without telling people to put the votes on you, where it's like that people think their plan, hey, let's all put our votes on Fishback tonight. But you sort of like know that's coming and you're sort of inviting that to happen. But it's not that you're orchestrating that to happen. Does that make sense?
I guess it makes sense in as much as like that way there's less of a chance that a nullifier will be played. But I just think like, I don't know. I mean, I guess, there's so much now that's dependent on those big flashy plays.
Like
that,
going back to when Karishma played her idol and we were speculating on, boy, was Karishma really trying to stir the pot because she knew she was going to play her idol and then that way she could use it to maximum efficiency. It turned out that that was fan fiction. That was not that she was not trying to do that. But in that sort of scenario where, you're playing your idol that night, why not, really act out and then, get those votes cast on you if you're going to definitely play your idol.
Right. Because playing the idol when you're safe, it's just sort of like a wah wah, sad trombone moment where, no one is going to be that impressed. But like everyone's like mind is blown if you play your idol and you get like, oh my God, 9 votes.
Steven, I want to talk about Rob and Sandra here, who were very underutilized here in the finale. I think a lot of us expected, okay, oh, Rob and Sandra are going to play a big role in the final tribal council. Rob and Sandra potentially were going to vote on the final tribal council, was talked about all season, especially then with the removal of Dan. I felt like that I would have bet almost anything that, okay, well, okay, we're losing a jury vote, so okay, let's get Rob and Sandra in there. Rob and Sandra opened the show. They got on their boat and they left. Was their flight on day 37? Did they have to like, hey, Jeff, I need a couple of weeks before season 40.
Well, it's funny. I also expected it, but I'm actually like, I kind of expected them to give like some sort of speech. I mean, I think voting would have violated the integrity of the game
the oath of the Island of the Idols.
The oath of the island, right.
Thou shalt not violate.
Yeah. I did expect some sort of speech, but it was sort of weird. It was kind of anticlimactic the way they were like, well, we've taken away so much from Survivor. All right, see you later. I'm going this way. Like, you go that way. But I did love the final treasure hunt at the Island of the Idols. I thought that was so fun.
Yeah, and that was fun. Another fun moment from this episode.
There hasn't been a real treasure hunt on Survivor in a while, or an idol hunt. You know, it's typically just been like, maybe there's a single clue, but it used to be like a series of clues to find one immunity idol. You know, now they're just like dangling from trees.
Yeah.
But this was really fun with all the different clues. And then the narrative of like Tommy, he's being colorblind. So he has to tell Dean, who then finds it himself. Such a great sequence.
Yeah. Again, I thought that was a really fun Dean moment in the episode. And then
swing.
He's going to go swing. At one point, he said he couldn't help with the idol because he really needed to poop. I thought that was really fun. Ultimately, Dean ends up with an idol that doesn't end up getting used. But I did think that was a fun sequence overall.
Yeah. Yeah. A really fun sequence. I missed it. I saw some people tweeting about like how great the buffs were. Like maybe I looked down, but like, I mean, there was a fun moment with like the buff having a clue to an idol. And I love that Tommy figured it out. Like, what was the idea behind like commemorative buffs? Like these, it's like, here's our commemorative coin collection. Like,
I don't know.
These valuable stamps from
We
Fiji.
Really went like a full escape room on the Island of the Idols tonight. Series of clues. Did you notice that there's a machete in the bed? But yeah, that was a weird moment of like, you've made it to the final five. Here's your commemorative final five buff. That was odd.
One thing I want to say though, that it's not directly related to this, but it's sort of tangentially related to this. You know, I was actually talking with Cochran after that, after the episode where Lauren had her Island of the Idols test, where she had to like convince the tribe to do something to get her, you know, they all had to sit out, and then she had to put the right money on the right person. And he made the point that it was really nice to see idols being given for something other than just like being good at scavenger hunts. And I thought that was a really interesting point. You know, like this season, maybe for the first time, was giving idols to people for things that were, I mean, I guess also to a certain degree with Ghost Island, but it was not just like, who's the best at like digging in the trees. It's also like, oh, who's the best at social manipulation? Who's the best at other things? And the idea that idols might be something that are rewards for tasks that take into, you know, that bring in skills that are beyond just like, you know, digging and noticing blue against green, I thought was could be an interesting development for the show, and I hope they take it and run with
it. Just to add to that, when you say noticing blue against green, you know, I do wonder if, you know, Tommy being colorblind, which ends up being brought up in the episode tonight, ended up being something that hindered him in finding idols throughout this season, where we talked about how there was the reticular activating system where used to find the idol, and the blue was standing out. So for Tommy, that he was not able to lean on that.
Yeah, maybe he should have more broadly shared, like, hey, I'm colorblind, and that's why I was not able to find any idols.
Maybe he didn't even mention that in the final tribal council speech. That would have killed the jury.
that's what they want to vote on, is like, you know.
Yeah. Steven, but I just want to make one other point with Rob and Sandra. it really was like a weird use of Robin Sandra throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. It was sort of, I like the premise of it where they're going to be like fun guides and give them like fun tasks. But I mean, it wasn't like a coherent vision for the meaning of Survivor, but it was like some fun TV segments.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun TV. I saw this from a couple different people. Zach Brooks also comes to mind. Like, what was the point of Robin Sandra watching all those tribal councils?
Then, you know, it was a fun commentary.
It was fun commentary, but never really paid off. Like, there never was a point where Robin Sandra like ended up giving anybody a piece of advice from anything that they saw at the tribal council. There was no reveal to the contestants like, hey, all this time, Robin Sandra, we're right here. They didn't. I mean, did Robin Sandra like get to see how the rest of the season played out on TV, or did they? I mean,
they were watching live tonight.
They found out tonight. Like, they could have. Like, they didn't have to vote at the final tribal council, but like, they couldn't be there. Like, they sat there for 36 days, and like, all right, I guess we'll find out in a year.
Yeah, I was fully expecting a reveal of the Robin Sandra box, and I was sort of surprised that it did not happen.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Okay, Steven, so we ended up with Tommy getting the win, and we end up with our live show tonight. The live show, always, you know, it's always a wild ride. This season, we ended up with then, so, you know, some questions for, I feel like that we got questions for Tommy and Dean. Lauren gets a mention there, and Janet, we get to Sia money. Sia paid out some big bucks tonight.
Oh, yeah. Scandal of like, you know, A, she gave to three different people different amounts. It was, you know.
Well, that was last season, too.
What was last season?
Last season, oh, you're right. It was like 15. She gave Rick Devins $100,000 during the show. But
right.
Then we found out after the fact she gave Aurora $15,000, and then she gave Joe Anglin $15,000. So there are two Sia prizes. There's a $15,000 Sia prize, and there's a $100,000 Sia prize. It ended up being two grand prizes for Elaine and for Janet, and then a $15,000 runner-up prize for Sia for the Jamal segment.
It's going to get to the point where like you're going to be insulted when you're like the one guy who doesn't get Sia money.
I mean, Sia's giving out a lot of money. I mean, Sia is giving out $215,000 to Survivor contestants, which is closing in on, I mean, maybe not on season 40, but is closing in on what, like 20% of the prize pool of that the Survivor is giving away, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, it probably, not 20%, right? It's probably getting, it's probably closing in on there, which, like, is pretty wild.
Sia's making, you know, the show look bad, and like, they're coming off like Cheapo Depot compared to Sia.
Well, you know, and now, and Colin Stone tweeted, you know, now that the real equity in going on Survivor is competing for the Sia money. It used to be that you would just want to make it to the finale, right? Like, if you didn't think you could win, just like eke your way into the final tribal, knowing that you're going to, you know, get like a decent payday. But now it's like, start giving inspirational speeches, you know, start like, I mean, what's the tactic right here, Rob? Like, if you're someone who's angling for the Sia bucks, what's your strategy going into Survivor?
Well, it's really gone to all sorts of different people. I mean, it started out back in the beginning, you know, we found out that Keith Nail was the first person Sia wanted to reach out to, but then she didn't because she was too shy. And Keith Nail is like, just left like, what?
Poor Keith. Yeah, I know.
Then Ty ended up getting it because of that. He was basically took care of Mark the chicken. And so it seemed like, okay, well, if I take care of animals, that's the ticket to the Sia money. But then you also had people like Donathan, who really had no interaction with animals, but had sort of like a hard luck background of that it was a case of need for Donathan. I think Elaine's in that category. But then you had Janet, who ended up standing up for Kelly in this scenario. Rick Devins got it, I think, just for being an entertaining character, finding a lot of idols. So It's tough. I mean, Davey got the $15,000 version, and I'm not sure exactly what the reason was that Davey got it. Aurora got it because she grew up in an orphanage. It could be anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Big That's Wendy took so scary. Care of chickens, didn't get it's anything.
It's like the randomness of finding an idol or an advantage. It's like, you don't know, you know, it could be soon there's going to be anti-Sia money and that negates your Sia money.
Well, Randy Bailey sent Aaron the $5 for killing the chicken. Mm. I don't think Sia cares about chickens anymore.
Yeah, well, maybe she feels like she wants to keep a moving target. Cares.
She cares about chickens just as much, but she's not, you know, only looking at your chicken philosophy.
Were you really backpedaling there? Are you worried about offending the Sia overlords?
Hey, Steven, if I ever play again, I don't want to be out of the running before I start, okay? When I end up on Sia's bad side. I don't know if it came
You're not getting the Sia money. Rob, you might get the Rick Devens Sia money.
Yeah, I don't know how he got it. I gotta ask him. I don't know if they showed this on the telecast, but in the room, they cut to like a giant picture of Sia on the monitor.
Yeah. We saw a giant picture of Sia.
Because she wasn't there. It's also weird that sometimes like she's in the theater and she just runs up on the stage. That in the last one at the Edge of Extinction, she came up during the commercial and like gave Rick Devens a hug. But you know, she doesn't really love to be seen on television. But that's what's going on with the sea of money.
Do you think this is an option open to any other rich people? Like anyone can just like start giving
Where are all the other rich Survivor fans? Why don't they start ponying up any money for
someone like strategically minded, you know, like the best strategic game that didn't get far because of, you know.
Yeah. I mean, where's whatever. Tyler Perry's money for Survivor contestants?
Right.
Jimmy Fallon. I mean, he could come up with he can give something. He can give like an Omaha Steaks basket to somebody.
Yeah, Mayim Bialik is a big Survivor fan. You know, she could do like the nerdiest Survivor contestant.
Yeah. Okay. So they should have like a whole award show where the different celebrities come on. Maybe on CBS All Access. Yeah. Speaking of which, let me thank a sponsor real quick. And then we'll talk about everything, the way that the Kelly situation was handled on the finale tonight. On CBS All Access, of course, there is the great show, Tell Me a Story. Kevin Williamson's Tell Me a Story. Steven, I know that you are a fan of many different fairy tales. Do you have any of other fairy tales that come to mind of being favorites of yours?
I mean, you know, all of the classic Grimm fairy tales I just, you know, grew up loving. What about you? What are your favorite fairy tales?
Well, I think that I say Sleeping Beauty because that I would love to be able to sleep uninterrupted for many, many hours. But my children don't believe in that. But the new season of Kevin Williamson's Tell Me a Story takes the world's most well-known fairy tales, reimagines them as a dark and twisted psychological thriller, exploring an entirely new set of characters. This season features three legendary stories, Beauty and the Beast, Sleeping Beauty, and Cinderella. That's what drew me to Tell Me a Story, which is streaming on CBS All Access. Here's what you could expect. The show stars the incredible Paul Wesley, best known for his role in The Vampire Diaries, and also Danielle Campbell from The Originals and Carrie Ann Moss from The Matrix and Jessica Jones to round out a stellar cast. The new season was shot in Nashville, which means there is original music woven into the stories you won't want to miss. Sign up today for CBS All Access. Of course, plenty of great Survivor content there as well by going to cbs.com/Rob. Get your first week of CBS All Access for free and stream the new season of Tell Me a Story on December 5th at cbs.com/Rob. Get your first week of CBS All Access for free at cbs.com/Rob. Okay, Jeff.
I always like the Cinderella story. You know, I think that's like it's such a wonderful fantasy, and like they turn the pumpkin into a coach. It's such a great story.
You love coach.
You're so good. You're so quick. Yeah, it's such a pleasure to be able to chat with you. Just like to hear.
Yeah, always
jokes.
A pleasure as well, Stephen. Right. So tonight, Jeff teased it at the open show. We're gonna sit down with Kelly. He said, which I thought was an interesting way to phrase. What does it mean? We're gonna sit down with Kelly, and sure enough, they ended up clearing out the risers, getting the entire cast off the stage during one of the
Really? I was wondering where the cast was. That's interesting.
Yeah. So they cleared them out. They went all backstage, and then it was Jeff one-on-one with Kelly. And I thought that that was a very interesting way to do it. And, you know, you saw in Kelly's reaction that it was an incredibly pressure-packed moment for her. You know, she said a couple, two or three times to open up the segment, you know, I'm just, you know, very nervous about the whole thing. And, you know, Kelly did a great job. I wondered maybe if it might have been better to pre-tape that segment and then air it. But I'm sure then people would have said like, oh, they edited things out of that. So and, you know, honestly, I didn't see the segment that aired on TV. So I believe I'm assuming that what we saw in the room was what you guys saw on the TV. But, you know, no way to, you know, do this perfectly. But I thought they did a really good job of that, especially when I was taken aback when Jeff said the words, I was wrong.
Yeah, I totally agree. I completely agree with you. And, you know, I really felt like Kelly just did.
I think he said you were right.
No, I think he said he definitely said we were wrong. He certainly said you were right. I do think he said maybe he said we learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He opened the segment saying something like we were wrong. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine how stressful that must have been for Kelly. You know, it wasn't live, but it was live to tape, right? I mean, like she's in front of an audience there. She's talking about really serious issues. She knows the stakes. There's also just been this tremendous buildup, you know, the entire survivor community and really a lot of national media. This has been featured in the New York Times. Are focused on this now. And, you know, she wants to represent herself well, and she wants to, you know, also be a spokesperson for all the people who have reached out to her and all the other people, you know, who have suffered from similar things. And, you know, I think she did a great job. You know, I thought it was really great of her to acknowledge how nervous she was. You know, I think that was really, you know, just being so open and vulnerable was really great. You know, one other thing I thought that Jeff did really well was say like, hey, I want you to tell me what we did wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is your time to like say, tell me, you know, where we screwed up or like yell at me. He didn't say yell at me, but he said like, you know, like tell us what event or whatever it was, you know. And I thought that giving her the space to directly criticize the show's handling of things, I think was a great, you know, was the right thing for them to do and led to a good moment.
Yeah. And we got some transparency into what this process looked like. Jeff talked about how then when this whole incident was reported and Kelly mentioned to production what was going on with Dan, that Jeff talked about how production was on the phone with CBS and they were talking it through. And he talked a little bit more about some of those meetings that were had with the players. And I thought that was a very interesting thing, which we had, you know, speculated on the podcast during the course of the season, that there were players that said, hey, you know, that Dan, I know now Dan is, you know, the goatiest goat. He is, you know, going to be somebody he'll never get votes. And I want to keep him in the game. I want to, you know, he'll go to the end now. And I thought that that was also an interesting thing that Jeff confirmed on the finale tonight.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and CBS like today released new guidelines
last night released
new guidelines for the show, so that all contestants will be given training in both bias and, you know, sexual misconduct.
Yeah. And also a third party was going to then be involved with making the calls on, you know, a player's removal in situations like this in future seasons. And also, you know, confirming something that you reported on the podcast last week about how players were issued a warning at the start of season 40.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, you know, I still think that there will probably be uncomfortable moments in the shelter where there's like gray areas. You know, I don't know how they change that fundamentally, but I do think that, you know, giving people a place to speak up about it is so vital. And I think Kelly's boldness in doing that, you know, is just really going to be transformational for a lot of people, where, like I said to you before, like I've heard on the podcast, you know, I've heard from past Survivor contestants who were, you know, in those uncomfortable shelter moments and didn't feel like they had anyone to turn to or anything that they could say. So now they do. And that's great.
Mm-hmm. And this is going to be something that is going to be, ramifications beyond just Survivor, certainly into Big Brother and hopefully all across, you know, reality shows because of what went on here this season. And, you know, they can't change what happened with how the whole Kelly situation was mishandled. But as Kelly said herself, that, you know, there is hopefully an opportunity for change to come from this, and that hopefully, you know, this is we can avoid this type of situation, you know, from ever happening again.
Yeah, exactly.
And to ensure that there is, you know, swift action that happens if there's ever a similar situation that occurs on any of these shows.
Yes.
Okay. Steven, we got a tease tonight. We got a little bit of a glimpse at something that the Survivor fans have been waiting for quite some time.
The return of Edge of Extinction.
Season 40 of Survivor, Winners at War. Finally, Steven, we can talk about it. Of 20 of the greatest winners that ever played the game are here. The 20 best, Steven.
Well, I don't know if we'll say 20 best.
I think you could say 20 best.
I mean, the best game of all time is not represented there.
Who? Richard Hatch, JT. The original
JT,
Survivor
winner? JT is not playing.
Oh, no. JT didn't make the cut, Steven. I'm very sorry.
He had the perfect game. He played the first perfect game.
Yeah, then what happened?
I mean, you know, people were scared. They didn't want such a dominant player. Dominating season.
No JT on Winners
at
War.
You said the 20 best. I'm saying no. No. You're telling me that, you know, I'm not going to name names, but you know who I'm talking about. Those people are not better than JT.
All right, Steven. So our first look at I thought maybe tonight we would get a little bit of like Survivor winners. There's one every season. But who will come back? I thought we'd sort of get the theme release, but not any confirmed names. But we got the whole cast. Yep. We also found out that the Edge of Extinction is back, I'm sure, to the chagrin of many.
Everyone, hopefully.
You know, let me just say that if I had a choice of should there be Edge of Extinction or should there not be Edge of Extinction, I would pick there should not be Edge of Extinction. But
okay, I was worried where you were going with that.
If you were ever going to have the Edge of Extinction, I feel like that this is the season I would be the least mad to have an Edge of Extinction.
I guess because like we love these people, or like they're big, they're fun, big characters. Right. And it'll be like good to see them suffer.
Here's the difference. Chris Underwood gets voted out day 9, comes back into the game in the finale. Like wait, what? Who? I don't even know who this guy is. You know, Parvati gets voted out day 3, comes back.
Oh my God, don't jinx it. Don't say such things.
Day 36 and wins. Are people going to be like, what? Parvati? It's different.
You know what I like?
Yeah.
All these people who their whole lives, they go, I won Survivor. They're about to lose Survivor. 19 future losers is how I look at it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, taste the pain. How about that?
Yeah, taste the pain. Yeah, that should be this. Winners at War, taste the pain. No,
and you know what else? I was also that when these all these winners went to go play and they came back on Instagram and like were posting all these pictures of, I'm like, boy, this person looks skinny. This person looks skinny. This person, I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled on the whole season.
I hate that. People, there should be a moratorium on Instagram photos until you're like back up to your pregame weight.
But then I just told myself, well, maybe there's Edge of Extinction. Maybe there's Edge of Extinction.
Oh, the unspoiler.
And then when I found out there was Edge of Extinction, I'm like, ho, not spoiled. Yeah. Not I'm unspoiled. Yeah. So
Winners at War, the humbling.
The humbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something called what is it? Firebucks? Fire coins?
Fire tokens?
Fire tokens.
And so this is going to be an in-game currency. We know very little about it other than what was said in this preview, that there's going to be some kind of in-game currency that players can exchange for something. A lot of people are really upset about it. I'm cautiously optimistic. You and I have talked about The Genius, which is another TV game show that had an in-game currency where...
Oh.
What?
I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, I mean, the currency was
the
great.
Garnets.
The garnets. And there was so much fun from the garnets and the exchange of garnets and using garnets as leverage. And I actually think that there is significant garnet upside for these fire tokens. The idea of using these things as leverage and as a, you know, I mean, what and is just great. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay. All right. So more on that to come. I'm not sure exactly at what point we're going to start to dip into season 40 preview coverage. I think we'll probably get into that closer to after the holidays at the very least, and probably into 2020. But the premiere of Winners at War will be on February 12th, and Stephen and I have a very special event planned for that night. So be on the lookout for more information on that to come. Let's take some questions, Stephen. Brian Williams says, is Jeff phoning it in with his baggy long sleeve sweater and dark wash jeans? Really?
Oh, I love it. It wasn't baggy. My God, it like clung to his pectorals.
Yeah. Where, come on. Of all the things to pick on with this season, we're going to go after Jeff's outfit.
Oh, I thought he looked great. He looked like dark Jeff, you know, like he looked like someone yeah. Come to that. He looked looked like Archer. He looked like a supervillain from a comic book.
Archer.
Yeah.
Dark season.
Yeah. Okay. Dark season. Dark Jeff for a dark season.
OK. Stephen, what does Darren have to say?
All right. Darren Chan wants to know, which former winner does Tommy remind you of?
OK. Do you have a thought on this, Stephen?
That's interesting. Well, one thing we can say is that he and Cochran are both played dominant social games, both gingers. In fact, gingers do disproportionately well on Survivor. I believe of the three male gingers who have played, am I thinking Tommy, Cochran, and Patrick Bolton?
Chris
am I missing
Hammonds.
Someone? Chris Hammonds, right?
Victoria.
So did not win. Oh, no, male gingers.
Okay, all right.
So 50% of male gingers.
Are there a lot of female gingers that do poorly?
Well, we have yet to have a female ginger winner.
Okay, I guess so.
Yeah, but the male gingers do very well.
But I don't think I would say that Tommy played a Cochran game.
In terms of his hair color, he did.
I guess so. But can we move on past that? What about Patrick Bolton?
Yeah, I said Patrick Bolton.
Yeah.
He's part of the... the other... I would also say... I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, who played that sort of
okay, let
dominance.
Me throw somebody out. Let me throw somebody out there.
Yeah.
Okay. How about Todd?
Todd is a good one, but I mean, because also Todd was in a very similar position where he was never the biggest threat, but he was allied with all the biggest threat. That's a really great comparison.
Did Todd win immunity?
Todd did not win immunity. You know, he was friends with like James, so he knew where all the idols were, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
He was friends with he was at the sort of the heart of the different alliances. I think Todd is a really good comparison.
Todd had a better final tribal council.
I think what about Tyson Apostle?
Well,
I mean, Tyson had idols, true, but
Tyson had idols. Tyson also won immunities. So, you know, you're looking for somebody who didn't win immunities, didn't have idols, didn't have advantages.
But I mean, I think to you say know, like no idols or no advantages is a tough one. I mean, Earl Cole is another one who was, except he was like such a, you know, Earl was actually not a terrible comparison.
Yeah, I think Earl did win individual immunity at least once or twice. Did he do the Meke? Was that individual immunity?
Earl definitely won. But I think like, you know, in terms of like the most, so yeah, I mean, maybe it's Todd. It could be someone like Natalie White.
Yeah.
Who,
well, let me, you know. How about, you know, Sophie, I mean, if we're just like not including only men, I mean, Sophie did win individual immunity, I believe, at least.
She won a couple of immunities, I think. I mean, she certainly won the last
one. She won the last one, but it was never that she needed it. In the case of the one she won at the Final Four, it was to prevent Ozzy from winning it.
Right, but she needed it to win the game. Like, Ozzy would have won the game had Sophie
yeah,
not
but,
won that
but,
immunity.
So, I mean, if Albert won the Final Four immunity, like, I don't think that Albert wins the game. I saw Albert at the finale today.
Oh, how's he doing?
He's doing good. Doing good. Looks good. All right, let's go to, how about a Brandon? Brandon says, Island of the Idol Notes, Dean didn't learn jury management, Nora couldn't persuade, and Tommy won while never spending time with Rob and Sandra. So, Stephen, just to play off this, that I do think the best thing going for Tommy in terms of his win, and I think that he has totally embraced it, is like, hey, I hate all the twists too. I don't need them. Twists stink. Island of the Idols is garbage. I don't need, it's like advantages, extra votes, idol nullifiers, all stupid. I don't care.
Yeah, he had a very funny line about, like, those are not moves, you found things, which I thought was really great. Like, you didn't play the game, you, like, found trinkets on the ground. And I've felt that way, I mean, I think many of us have felt that way watching the show, about all, the silly advantages and things, where it's like, when did Survivor become a scavenger hunt? And I think Tommy should sort of call it out. I think that was great.
Yeah, he did a good job with that, and I think he's really playing it the right way. All right, Stephen, here's a question from Thomas, who says, what a great finale. Could Dean's amazing final tribal council performance be been good enough to beat Lauren and Nora if he was in the final three? So from what I understand, Lauren ends up winning this thing if she's in the final three. That's basically what we, I based on everything we've seen on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it sure seems like Lauren was the biggest threat going into the finale. Or, I'm sorry, Janet, obviously, but then Lauren after Janet.
Yeah. And interestingly, Lauren has a similar resume to Tommy. She did win one immunity. She found an idol, played it, didn't end up having, and she played it on herself on a vote where she didn't get any votes. But it's interesting that, Stephen, the word rubric was thrown around by Tommy at this final tribal council, that this jury seemed to be rewarding gamers, not just people who won and found.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that is sort of unusual. Do you think that, is there some aspect, like, why? Why was that the case? You'd think with a season that was themed for Island of the Idols, where, you know, every time anyone went to Island of the Idols, they were like, you know, trinkets were dangled in front of them, actually valued those things less. And maybe it's because they were so available to everyone that they were therefore less valuable, you know, because everyone had this like somewhat simple chance for some of them, right? Like you just had to like flip a coin in Dean's case to get these things that therefore like using them became less impressive.
Yeah, I think that they've devalued the idols and the advantages.
Just like they devalued the breakfast at day 39.
Yeah, it seemed like it still was a big hit.
Not as big as it would have been. Imagine the breakfast blowout.
Yeah. Okay. Stephen, what does this next one have to say?
All right. Zakira wants to know, congrats to Nicole says what for another successful winner pick. Yes. Nicole responds, goat.
Oh, Nicole is a goat? What?
Oh, the greatest of all time.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Periods there.
Yeah. And also knowing he's know-it-all stays here in the Fishback household.
The king stays king.
Adios, Sister Ninas. Linder Nino.
Okay, it's a question from Daniel. Tommy always had options and was in control of his game. Dean's survival in the game came down to a coin flip. That's not good gameplay. That's good luck. Was that a quote?
No, but it's also the case that Tommy's survival in the game came down to the same coin flip. If Dean loses the coin flip and doesn't get the idol nullifier, there's every reason to think Janet wins, which means Tommy wouldn't win either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So actually, Dean saved both Tommy and Dean.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Yeah. Stephen.
All right. Santa Chris wants to know, thoughts on the Survivor finale being pre-taped ahead of time? Well, Rob, you were there. What were your thoughts? Yeah. You go to the finale and come home and do the know-it-all.
The one part I didn't like was when I sat in traffic for 90 minutes coming home. That was the only part of it that I didn't like. But from what I understand, and again, I have not watched the video of the show, I think that everything that we saw ended up airing. I can't think of anything that was like, oh my God, I wonder if that's going to make the cut or not. I mean, I think they left in, from what I saw on Twitter, when Nora tried to say that somebody was a peacock and misspoke, and I believe that even made the final cut.
Yeah, she said, like, be a peacock. Yeah, I know that was there.
So if they didn't even take that out, then I think that was fine. What ended up happening, and I've been to a lot of these finales, that it seemed like that they were like breezing through the episode, where that normally that you're watching the episode and then the commercials are in real time and it's like a 3 or 4 minute break. It seemed like that they were only taking like maybe like a minute break in between the segments. But then it felt like during the taping of the reunion show that the breaks were longer. They were able to break down and move the risers in and out, which they wouldn't be able to do in a regularly scheduled live show. So basically, there was the final tribal council set, and then they went to commercial, and then they had like a whole build of the riser where everybody sits, like the traditional reunion show riser, where normally that's like two separate parts of the stage that they end up using for something like that. And so they ended up being able to do a little bit more with the build. So I ultimately don't think there was any difference. I know people were upset that it felt like, oh, they're trying to stop people from speaking. And I don't know if there was if they were afraid that if the show was live, then that somebody on the cast was going to throw out support for Dan, or somebody from the audience was going to, yell something out that was, anti the network or whatever. But in terms of how it played out, like I thought it was fine.
Yeah. Was the vibe any different in the actual?
No.
And the audience was the same size and everything?
Audience seemed exactly the same size. I thought Jeff seemed like he was in a pretty good mood throughout the show. Like there was, Jeff did some like Q&A with people in the audience, in between.
I'm sorry that we missed it.
Yeah. So
it's always one of the most absurd, we didn't get the Cochran shout out. That's been a real
there.
Survivor tradition.
I don't think he was there. I didn't see
when
him.
When Jeff comes down, he typically yells out, Cochran!
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if it's directed at Cochran. I think it's just like something he says, possibly like some people that. Have like,
So I thought that overall, I know that people were upset that they pre-taped the finale, but I ultimately don't think that there was any difference in how it played out.
Well, that's great.
Okay. Right. Let's take some more questions. JP Talks Survivor says, what if Dean gave his idol to someone to use and then nullified them?
I mean, that seems like a kind of crazy. I mean, I guess it just seems sort of pointless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think the play would have been sort of what we were talking about. It was like nullify Janet's idol, give Tommy the idol, really just sort of show like I am in control of this situation. Like I am deciding every part of what happens here at the final five.
He had so much stuff that he could have maybe, used it more effectively. But, what are you going to do? It seems like it was Tommy's game to lose.
Or give Nora the idol. Just give someone the idol. All right. Mike Edwards wants to know, now that you guys can talk about Survivor 40, who are you the most excited to see? And whose game do you think will change the most? That's a fun topic of conversation. Yeah.
All right. So in terms of who are you most excited to see? List off the names. It's a good,
Sophie's number one for me. Like,
that's exciting. That Sophie is going to get to play again.
I know, because, it's funny. And I really think her legacy has increased over time. Certainly when she won, people were, giving her a lot of crap at the time for riding Coach's coattails. I was giving her crap, mostly as a joke. But I'm really excited that she gets to play again. I'm excited to watch her again. A lot of my other people I know have played multiple times, but I think seeing her get to go back for a second time is really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, run down the list. I mean, this is a great cast. We're going to see Kim Spradlin play
Kim,
again.
Kim is actually number one. I'm sorry. I said Sophie out of loyalty, but Kim is actually my number one.
Believe it or not, Tyson is on this cast even. And it's weird because I podcast with Tyson every single week and I don't remember him ever leaving the podcast to go film the season. So I still don't even know how this is possible.
Yeah, very stealthy.
Yeah. I'm wondering if maybe they're just in season 40, maybe they just use old Tyson clips that were pre-recorded to put him in the season.
So.
Because I don't remember a week that he wasn't on the podcast.
The man TR is an all-timer. That's definitely worth a comeback.
Yeah. So I mean, this is they really did a great job with the cast here, and maybe not every single person that you wanted to see, but there are people back there that you I never thought we'd see Yul again. I can't believe Ethan is back playing Survivor.
Yul and Ethan, that's so like Yul was like my all time favorite winner. You know, one of my the first player I really 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 cheered for. I'm so excited to see him back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Tony, I mean, Tony,
I never thought Tony would play again after Game Changers.
I think like Game Changers is probably the best thing that could have happened to Tony to go to come back after having had that like very early boot. I think like, you know, Tony was screwed on his second season, no matter what happened. I'm kind of glad we got the Game Changers out of the way. Give him a fresh start.
Yeah. And look, that if you're telling me that potentially, look, I wouldn't make Tony my winner pick based on what we saw happen to him last time out. But if you're telling me that then Tony would go to the edge of extinction and stay there, look, I'm not gonna complain about the edge of extinction if it means you're gonna give me Tony for a whole season.
Yeah, and I mean, notably also, you know, Rob and Sandra will be there as well. I think it's fun that Rob and Amber are going to play together.
I think it's really fun also. I know it's great. We could get into the, like, we could do a whole, like 5 hours tonight talking about the...
I'm sure you will.
The season 40, I guess. I saw Amber at the finale real quick that I was I was passing by, and she said, hey, Sesternino.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So she knows who you are.
She remembers. She remembers. Okay.
Uh-huh. And you haven't mentioned Jeremy yet. Very excited to see Jeremy.
Yeah. How cool. How cool is that? Yeah, very, very exciting. Steven.
You know, one more. Michelle.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that Michelle has a chance. You know, she's gotten probably more crap than anyone other than Chris Underwood for her win. I'm really excited to see her have the opportunity to redeem herself and really prove the haters wrong.
Yeah. No need for redemption. She won. She's won the, won the game.
Sorry. So, prove the haters, not redeem.
Yeah,
you're right.
Tell the haters to GTFO. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should get a great opportunity for that. But no need for any redemption for...
And my Survivor son, Kentucky Nick Wilson.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. A couple more questions here tonight. Here is from Joe Daly. Do Rob and Sandra get to live in the house they built for the season 40?
Oh my God, I know. What a mansion.
But again, it's just like such a weird thing. Rob and Sandra build a mansion and then the survivors lived in it for 3 days. It like just a weird plot line that didn't really go anywhere.
And some of that stuff, obviously, they did not build. Like, those chairs were not Rob built.
What?
I mean, Rob is a construction guy. He knows how to build an incredible shelter. I'm sure with, like, a lot of time and a lot of resources and
Steven,
a lot of food,
what you, most what of that stuff he can about? Do.
But most of that stuff, I actually think there's a chance he built.
Steven.
No, none of it.
You Boston Rob can't build bookcases for their island shelter?
The chairs, though, like, the stitching on the chairs was so regular.
Steven, they clearly built all that stuff. Come on.
I just can't imagine Rob doing the stitching.
No, smarten up, Fishback. They had a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah. He learned how to stitch.
Yeah.
All right. Aaron Nottingham wants to know, is it more of an advantage or disadvantage for Rob and Sandra to have just gone from being in the wilderness for 35 plus days and then head straight out weeks to months later to actually play this time? They're going to be shocked that they don't have infinite food.
Mm-hmm.
Like Survivor with no food. What is this?
Yeah. I guess it doesn't hurt, but I'm pretty sure they probably went home in between. Like, I don't think that they went right for, like, I don't think that they started season 40, like, days after season 30. I
mean, but it's shortly thereafter.
It was shortly
like
thereafter,
or two after.
I suspect they went home.
If I have to take, like, a 14-hour flight four times in, like, 2 months, that's a lot.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure they had a break in between I'm sure people know the production schedule, but they did not start filming season 40 until after The Edge of Extinction aired. And I'm pretty sure that there was probably, at least 3 weeks in between the end of season 39 and the start of season 40.
It's still not very much. I feel like I'm still recovering from Survivor. It's been a decade.
From token cheese.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I haven't even started to process Cambodia yet.
All right. So let's talk about what else is coming up here on the podcast. So speaking of Tyson, Danny Bryson and myself talked about on the latest News AF. Cedar, are you going to go see the new Cats movie this weekend?
No.
No. Okay. Well, if you do, you'll see what they did to Jason Derulo. And they ended up doing a heavy edit job on Jason Derulo, from what we understand here. So we talked about that and more on the latest News AF. And then, of course, on Sequester, they talked about the latest episode with, I believe, Krista DeBono, a former Sequester player. Taryn and Brent had the recap there on the latest Sequester recap. Then on the Purple Pants podcast, check out what Bryce Isaiah had to say about everything on the latest Purple Pants podcast. And then on Robin Akiva Nita podcast, that was the Decade Challenge, went back in time 10 years to talk about the kinds of stuff I was watching back in December 2009, as Robin Akiva talked about season 3, episode 7 of The Jersey Shore.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah.
What happened?
Sammy's sweetheart and Ronnie got into a big fight.
Oh, they had a real tempestuous relationship.
Yes, yes. Hot and cold, as per usual, yeah, with Sammy, yeah, Sweetheart and Ronnie. Star-crossed lovers. Steven, then The Masked Singer also had its finale tonight. Check out what Puya and Liana had to say about last week's episode, and then be on the lookout for their finale recap, no spoilers, about The Masked Singer.
Yes.
Okay. And then Mike Bloom, who's staying at my house.
Oh, how fun.
Yes, we will be in this room tomorrow to talk about everything that went on with the finale. Answer your questions. Get your voicemails in. robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. You can email your questions in. survivor@robiswebsite.com. We'll talk about everything from being at the finale, what we thought about the live show, interviews, and more. Also, be sure to check out Mike's interviews from the red carpet himself, that parade.com, or follow a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. Check that out. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the RHAP BNB. I believe Eric Stein is going to join Mike and Liana to play some games. And then the big Y blank lost / Y blank won final episode recap is coming. Be on the lookout for that in our Rehap Ups feed. And then Dr. Mike, is that the giant Dr. Mike head on the Island of the Idols? we're going to talk with Dr. Mike as we put a bow on the season on this week in Survivor.
It's always a wild ride with Dr. Mike.
Oh, it'll be a wild one. It'll be a very wild ride with Dr. Mike. Of course, you can get RHAP merch at robinswebsite.com/merch. And then, of course, the only way to get even deeper into all of this nonsense that we're talking about here on RHAP, robhaswebsite.com/patron, our patron only podcast feed, our patron only Facebook community, and much more at robhaswebsite.com/patron. Also, be on the lookout for my interviews with the Final Five, and also Kelly was available on the red carpet tonight. So I have interviews that are going up. We filmed video and we'll have audio. I will say that the interviews were a little tight, not super long interviews with everybody, but we did get a chance to talk to all of the parties involved in tonight's festivities in the Final Five. And we should have that up later on tonight here at robinswebsite.com/iTunes. Steven.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? Another season in the books.
We did it, Rob. The two of us.
Yes. So here we are, ready to go with season 40. It's going to be a short off season.
I know. It starts in February.
Yeah. Believe it or not.
Is that why? Is it more episodes?
I'm not sure.
People were talking about like 90 minutes. What?
Yeah, a 2-hour premiere, I believe, for the season premiere. But I believe Survivor will be on a 1-hour time slot for the regular episodes.
Oh, people were so hopeful about the 90-minute episodes.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if they end up doing any sort of like extended coverage of anything, or if they take advantage of CBS All Access. But I believe that the premiere of Survivor Season 40, I believe, is coming. I think it's just 7 weeks from tonight.
Yeah, it's like in February 12th. Something.
February 12th.
Yeah.
February 12th coincides with the exact day of the 10-year anniversary of Rob as a podcast.
Wow. Is that, you think that's deliberate?
Yeah, I think so. I think they planned
they
it
moved
out.
It they up waited, to like honor Rob.
They waited for the right day. And yes, the first episode of Rob's podcast came the day after the Survivor Heroes versus Villains premiere. So it will be 10 years in the making. The Survivor season 40 premiere. Of course, we will have plenty of preseason coverage coming your way about Survivor 40 in the coming weeks.
Rob, and it was 10 years ago tonight where we took our iconic picture with Russell Hantz.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's the exact night. It was like, I think it was actually the 17th.
Yes. So, Stephen Fishback and I celebrating, we didn't commemorate our 10 years of friendship.
I know. It was slightly before the end of Samoa. We met during Samoa, I think.
You don't even remember our
I do. We met at the Mertz's party.
Which was in August.
Uh-huh. August. Okay. So slightly more. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Okay.
During Samoa.
Yes. And then...
I guess that was before Samoa. I see. Yeah.
And so I met Steven the summer. He was coming off of Survivor Token Sheens. And they said, hey, meet the new hot reality star on the block. They said, this guy really reinvented the game.
It was, you know, it was funny. Like, I remember that summer hearing about, like, Russell's the greatest strategist of all time. And it was just somewhat galling to have just come off of playing and hearing about this, like, incredible guy, Russell, who was going to blow everything up.
There you go. All right.
But he was great.
Well, Steven, it'll be a short off season for us. We'll be back together soon. Anyway,
7 weeks.
All right. And of course, Steven, a very happy holidays to you and yours.
Oh, to you too. Yes, to the family.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to see Nicole at the live show. I haven't seen her in so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nice.
Steven, anything you want to tell people to check out? Of course, follow Steven Fishback on Twitter.
No, just, you know, happy holidays to everyone, you know, celebrating your thing.
Yeah.
Do you. Be a peacock.
easy. All right. Steven, are you going out to any parties tonight for after the finale?
Oh god.
You want us to
you?
Come?
Are you going to go?
Pick you up on the way? Yeah. What time is it? 9:45? Yeah.
9:45. It's like almost bedtime.
Yeah.
What about you? Are you going out to the parties?
I think I am. Yeah. I'll make an appearance. I'll show my face.
Yeah.
And then my kids are going to wake me up in like 6 hours anyway. So
that's the thing. You got to get up in the morning, you know, and the new work day starts tomorrow. Yeah, tonight ends one season of Survivor. Tomorrow, something else begins.
Okay. All right. Stephen Fishback, great work tonight. And as always, of course, thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes as well. Take care, everybody. And of course, happy holidays and a very happy new year. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.